Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, March 6th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll talk to Kayla Royce about the upcoming International Fly Fishing Film Festival. We'll learn about Tuesday night's Poetry Out Loud competition. Katrina Wolford will be here to highlight this year's Northwoods Writer Symposium. And poet Julie LeMay will tell us about her reading and book signing tonight. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here, live and local on a Juneau afternoon. Currently 15 degrees at the Juneau International Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A United Nations representative who focuses on indigenous issues has wrapped up her two-week visit to the U.S. She met with tribes in the Southwest and on the Northern Plains. Jim Kent spoke with the special rapporteur on the rights of indigenous people about her trip and has this report.
Victoria Tauli Corpus travels the world from her home in the Philippines to investigate issues of concern for indigenous peoples. Tauli Corpus began her journey in the U.S. by visiting the Navajo, Hopi, and Pueblo people, where they discussed concerns over oil and gas exploration and uranium mining. Then she headed north to the Fort Berthold Reservation and saw the gas flares of the Bakken oil fields. The last stop for Tauli Corpus was in North Dakota at the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, where she examined the Dakota Access Pipeline issue.
I find it very unfortunate that the consultations have not been done with the tribes in Standing Rock Sioux, and even the environmental impact assessment that was made by the Army Corps of Engineers didn't reflect the concerns of the tribes, especially in relation to how their sacred places and cultural sites are going to be adversely affected by the pipeline.
Tauli Corpus adds that as one who's taken part in public protests in the Philippines, she feels that local law enforcement were excessive in their use of force against the Dakota Access Pipeline protesters. The official report on the UN Special Rapporteur's visit to indigenous peoples in the U.S. is expected to be available to tribes and the federal government in June. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
New figures from the Canadian government suggest the cleanup of drinking water problems in First Nations communities is moving slowly. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, while some drinking water advisories have been lifted, others have been added.
The government statistics show that there are still more than 70 drinking water advisories in First Nations communities across Canada. Over the past year and a half, about 18 of those warnings have been resolved. That's allowed people to drink tap water again. But figures from the Department of Indigenous and Northern Affairs also show that there have been a dozen new advisories. The statistics highlight just how difficult and complex the job facing the government is. Ottawa has promised to have all the long-term advisories on water resolved within 5 years. And last year, it planned $1.8 billion over 5 years to help those First Nations communities build new water infrastructure on reserves. Romeo Saganash is a First Nations Member of Parliament for the New Democratic Party. He's also the party's Indigenous Affairs critic. Saganash says the government is just not moving fast enough.
You know, they've been here for a year and a half almost, and at that rate, at that pace, I don't think we'll get to the finish line with the remaining 3.5 years.
Many First Nations leaders agree the process is taking too long, and they blame the federal government bureaucracy. But the Minister of Indigenous Affairs, Carolyn Bennett, says the government will do what's necessary because it is so important as a commitment to the quality of life, dignity, and fairness. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Some Alaska Native dog mushers are among those taking part in the 2017 Iditarod Sled Dog Race in Alaska, including John Baker. Baker, who's from Kotzebue, is a veteran of the race, a participant since the 1990s. He won the Iditarod in 2011, becoming the first Inupiat to win and the first champion from Northwest Alaska. Baker has placed in the top 10 more than a dozen times. A ceremonial start to the race was held over the weekend in Anchorage. More than 70 mushers and their dog teams are leaving from the official start in Fairbanks. The near 1,000-mile journey ends in Nome. The race is a tribute to Alaska's history and the role of sled dogs. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce and Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitors planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, March 6, 2017. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. And in the studio now is Kayla Royce. She is on the board of Trout Unlimited here in Juneau, and she's an events coordinator, and she's here to tell us about this Friday's International Fly Fishing Film Festival at the Rockwell. Welcome to the show, Kayla.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so Trout Unlimited, tell us a little about it.
Yeah, so Trout Unlimited is sort of it's a national organization that we sort of work to conserve the freshwater fisheries for both salmon and trout. Here in Juneau, our local chapter spans all of Southeast Alaska. Juneau is sort of the most active hub at this very moment in time.
Okay. And fly fishing happens in streams. I know you're a fly fishing person.
Yes.
Tell us, what is it about fly fishing that draws so many people to it, would you say?
You know, I think fly fishing, a lot of it is it's the connection that you get to the outdoors, to the fish, to the environment that you don't necessarily get with other fisheries, I think. And here in Juneau, you know, it's such an awesome place because you can leave your front door and be fishing in 15 minutes. And so, yeah, fly fishing for that is just, it's all about sort of the community of anglers and the sort of the connection that it builds.
I'm not sure if you'll give us your favorite spots, but where are a few places that you like to fish?
I'm a big fan of like Montana and Cowie Creek. I also really enjoy the channel fishery. I think that's really unique to Juneau, bracketing like the low tides and sort of targeting fish out in the saltwater, which is pretty fun. So that's a unique fishery to Juneau. So.
Okay. And so this is the International Fly Fishing Film Festival this Friday. This is a fundraiser for Trout Unlimited, right?
It is, yes.
Give us the details on the evening.
Yeah, so the International Fly Fishing Film Festival, also referred to as the IF4, just so it's not a big mouthful, it's a film tour that travels sort of globally, and we're hosting it this year as a fundraiser. There's a series of different films ranging from 10 minutes to 20 minutes typically. I should say 5 to 20 minutes, usually about 8 or so films, and we'll have a bunch of items, a big raffle going on. We're giving away a bunch of gear, fly rods and shirts and hats and a couple of other big ticket items that you'll find out night of event. And it should be super fun. Last year we had a great turnout. It was a great time. There's a no-host bar. Yeah.
Okay. Like you said, it's a fundraiser for Trout Unlimited. How many members would you say are in the Juneau chapter of Trout Unlimited or Southeast?
Yeah, so Southeast, I think there's a total of about 250, I would guess. The bulk of them, I think that we have in Juneau probably 75 to 80. And so we do have a large chunk. These are all guesstimations.
Sure. And are you looking for more members?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So at the event, we'll have a table set up for new members if you want to become involved. We do a bunch of events through the winter. I've hosted a bunch of different Barflies events, too, where we hang out at a bar and tie flies in town. We've done a couple at the Imperial and at Louis this year. And so we'll have one more planned on March 28th. And those are all open. They're all open to the public. Even this, you know, the IF4, I encourage people that even if you don't fly fish, I think it's super awesome. And we're all getting that sort of springtime itch right now. Yeah, to come watch the films, but we will have a membership table. So if anyone's interested in getting more information, we're definitely there for that.
Okay. And you were saying that most recently, maybe you were involved with some stream restoration here in town.
Yeah, Yeah. There's been a lot of stream restoration in town. You know, Juneau's a great place for hiking, streamside and whatnot. But in that, there's a lot of sort of the stream, the trails along stream beds and stuff will start falling in and sloughing in. And so there's been a lot of streamside rebuilding of planting trees and whatnot for sort of stabilization of streams and whatnot.
Okay. Support stuff like that at the Trout Unlimited fundraiser this Friday at the Rockwell Ballroom. Doors at 6, starts at 7. If people want more information, Kayla, where should they go?
You can email me, or you can go to the Alaska Fly Fishing Goods webpage. And, yeah, my email is kayla@alaskaflyfishinggoods.com.
All right, Kayla, thanks so much for coming in. Anything else you want to add?
No, I hope to see you guys all there.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
I'll tell you why I can't find you. Every time I go out to your place, you gone fishing.
How you know?
Well, there's a sign upon your door.
Uh-huh.
Gone fishing.
I'm real gone, man.
You ain't working anymore.
Could be.
There's your hole out in the sun where you left a row half done. You claim that hoeing ain't no fun.
But I can prove it.
You ain't got no ambition. Gone fishing. By a shady, weighty pool.
Shangri-La. Really la.
I'm wishing I could be that kind of fool.
Shall I twist your arm?
I'd say no more work for mine.
Welcome to the club.
On my door I'd hang a sign. Gone fishing. Instead of just a wishing.
Papa Bing, I stopped by your place a time or two lately, and you weren't home either.
Well, I'm a busy man, Louie. I got a lot of big deals cooking. I was probably tied up at the studio.
You weren't tied up, you dog. You just playing old gone fishing. There's a sign upon your door.
Pops, don't blab it around, will you?
Gone fishing.
Keep it shady. I got me a big one staked out.
You ain't working anymore.
I don't have to work. I got me a piece of Gary.
Cows be milking in the barn.
I have the twins on that. The tail each take a side.
But you just don't give a darn.
Give them 4 bits of cow and hand lotion.
You just never seem to learn.
Man, you taught me.
You ain't got no ambition.
You're convincing me.
Gone fishing. Got your hound dog by your side.
That's old Cindy Lou going with me.
Gone fishing. Biting at his hand.
Get away from me, boy. You bother me. Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross, we gone fishing instead of just a wishing.
Bumpo, baby, bumpo, bumpo, bumpo.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to a Juneau afternoon here on Monday, March 6, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 13 minutes past the hour.
This is Bird Note. A sudden bright flash of copper feathers signals a northern flicker's swoop into the backyard. There it hangs by its feet from the suet feeder, a handsome bird, a foot long. It's a woodpecker by affinity, but one that hardly looks the part. Where most woodpeckers are a reliable mix of black, white, and bits of red, the northern flicker is buffy tan overall. Its breast sports a distinctive black patch. The undersides of its wings and tail feathers flash with coppery red, giving the bird its western nickname, red-shafted flicker. You're likely to see a yellow-shafted on the Great Plains and in the East. Novelist Jonathan Franzen's first encounter with a flicker highlights its wonderful, anomalous appearance. He writes, "I saw my first northern flicker and enjoyed its apparent confusion about what kind of bird it was. Unwoodpeckerish in plumage, like a mourning dove in war paint, it flew dippingly, in typical woodpecker fashion, white rump flashing, from one ill-fitting identity to another. It's our good fortune that the delightful northern flicker is a common sight, whether red-shafted, yellow-shafted, or hybrid,
from backyards to woods to canyons.
Today's show is brought to you by White Flower Farm, a family-owned mail-order nursery offering a wide range of perennials, annuals, and shrubs for spring planting. More information is at whiteflowerfarm.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 6th. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 15 minutes after the hour. And I have high school poets in from all over the state today. They're in for the Poetry Out Loud competition, which is tomorrow night here in Juno, here at 360 in the KTOO building. Issa Weiss, welcome to the show. Remind me where you're from.
I'm from Wasilla, Alaska.
Well, welcome to Juno. So nice to have you. Juan Sarmiento, welcome to the show. Juan, where are you from?
I'm from Homer.
Okay, welcome to the show, Juan. And Alyssa Koyuk, welcome to the show. Nice to have you. Where are you from?
I'm from here in Juno.
All right, JDHS to be exact, right?
Yes.
And Janya Toomey, did I say that right?
Yep.
And where are you from?
I'm from Anchorage.
Okay. So correct me if I'm wrong, but all of you have been competing like all year, and maybe some of you last year too, to sort of win your school and then your region, and now you are part. You are one of four of ten finalists here in the state of Alaska. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know. Issa, we want to start with you. When did this whole journey start for you?
Well, right after winter break, my English teacher introduced Poetry Out Loud to my English class, and it was a class assignment to memorize a poem and perform it. And she said that it was extra credit for anyone who brought it to the school competition, and I thought, why not? So I memorized a second poem, and I went, and it just kind of moved along from there, and I did it with one of my really good friends, so it's been really fun.
Excellent. How about you, Juan?
Well, I'm from Argentina, so I moved to Alaska not too many years ago, and I had an English class to get to know the language. One of the assignments was we had to recite Roses Are Red, Violets Are Blue, and I think, can't remember what I did exactly, but I think I jumped on top of a chair, unbuttoned something, and I belted it out, and my English teacher was on the floor just laughing, and that's when I said, oh, this is kind of fun. So Poetry Out Loud just kind of came to me when I was in Alaska.
All right. How about you, Alyssa?
I guess my story is kind of similar to Issa's. My English teacher introduced it to us, and I just thought, well, if it's an assignment, I might as well put all my effort into it and have fun while I'm doing it. So I picked poems that I could relate to and went on to the school competition and had fun, and now I'm here today.
All right. Janya?
Yeah, so I have a similar story, too. My freshman and sophomore years, it was a requirement for our English classes, but this year it was actually extra credit, and I decided to do it, and I made it to my school competition. I actually didn't win my school competition, but top two got to go to regions, so I won regions, and now I'm here.
Okay. Issa, were you writing poetry or reading poetry before this came to be?
I've not been huge into poetry before Poetry Out Loud, a little bit dabbling in, but starting this year and once I started looking through the poems and reading, because you have to pick the poems from the website and reading through all the different choices to try to decide which three ones you're going to pick, it's really fun to start to read poetry, and this is something I've since gotten into.
How about you, Juan?
I mean, I'm not going to lie, I don't think I had any interest in poetry whatsoever before I got to go on a stage to recite, but after the competition, you just ease yourself into it. You read a couple of poems, you like them, and yeah, I find myself reading poetry for joy, crazy as that sounds, once in a while.
Alyssa?
Yeah, I've always enjoyed reading poetry, but I've never been a huge, I mean, I didn't go out of my way to read poems, and being exposed to all of these different types of poems and seeing all the genres out there that and all the great authors, it's been really interesting, and I'm really, it's not just for one type of person. Anybody can have fun doing poetry, I've found.
All right, Janya?
I actually used to really dislike poetry, but I think it's because poetry is taught in kind of a weird way in schools, but this year I have a really, really great English teacher who's really heightened my appreciation for poetry.
What's his or her name?
Mr. Vanno.
Shout out to Mr. Vanno.
Yeah, shout out to Mr. Vanno.
Changing youth's futures right now.
Yeah, he's a great teacher. I think he has a major in poetry or something like that. But he really emphasized that poetry is one of the most difficult forms of literature because it's the best words in the best order. And just the performance aspect of poetry out loud makes it all much better.
Okay. So when you all were looking through options of poems to recite, maybe start with you, Issa, what was it about the ones that you chose?
So I just want to start this off by saying that's been the hardest part of this entire process. I just remember at night going on to the computer and just looking through each of the poems and trying to decide. I asked my librarian for some recommendations because I was a little bit overwhelmed with all the good choices, and I kind of went from there. And that was the easiest way for me to kind of pick out the ones. And she ended up picking ones I really related to. So,
how about you, Juan?
Sometimes I read the first line of a poem and I just think to myself, nah. And that's kind of a quick judgment, but I guess that a poem that I would pick has a way of kind of hooking me in. It has a voice to it. I really appreciate it. Writing that has a voice and that I can see through it how I would perform it. And that sort of character is what I choose.
Okay. Alyssa?
I personally picked my poems based off of things that I could relate really strongly to because I felt that I could relay their meaning the best. And going through the 300, 400 some poems on the website was very tedious, but when you go through and you just narrow it down and you look at the ones that you like, it's really fun. And I would read it to myself a few times and determine, that one doesn't quite fit. I don't think I could do that one very well. I don't think that I have the meaning to that down. But once I've narrowed it down to about three or four, it just comes naturally.
All right. Janya, what helped you choose?
Well, the first poem that I picked, which is called Ophelia Che Piange, I initially clicked on it because it had a funny title that was in Italian, and I ended up really enjoying the poem. My second poem is Ozymandias, and that one I clicked on because it was the title of a very, very intense Breaking Bad episode, but I ended up really liking the poem, and actually the Breaking Bad episode helped me understand what was going on in the poem. And my third poem, Dear Reader, I picked it because it hit me really hard emotionally when I heard a classmate recite it.
Okay. So thinking about POL and this experience, and maybe one of you will have a chance, well, I guess one of the 10 will have a chance to go to Washington, D.C. to compete in the nationals. Whether you win or not, though, what's sort of the takeaway for you, Issa? Do you feel like from now on maybe you're going to go out of your way to read more poetry? Are you going to start writing your own? What's it for you?
I think the reading for sure. I did a lot of the searching online with my mom, and so it was a really fun opportunity for us together, and it's always fun to see what she sees in a poem and what I see in a poem. So I think together that's something we'll be doing in the future.
Okay. Juan?
For me, the biggest part of the competition is having that yes man attitude. It sounds, a little obscure to enter a poetry recitation contest. Maybe you aren't totally pumped at first, but you just say, sure, I'll do it. And I ended up making it to state, and so did everybody else in this room. So to me, that kind of zest and drive to just try things is the most important part of this. And I enjoy poetry now.
All right. Alyssa?
Yeah, I really do enjoy poetry. It's a fun way to express anything that's going on in your life. And when you read other poetry that you can relate to, it's really, it's like any other form of art, any other reading, any other drawings. It's relatable and it's fun and it's nice.
Janya?
I am just already really, really overjoyed that I get to come to Juno. This has already been really cool. One of the reasons that I actually hope to make it to Nationals is I've discovered more poems on the website that I really enjoy and would love to recite. But, yeah, it's incredible. My appreciation for poetry has expanded so much during this competition. I have started writing it a little bit. I think it's kind of therapeutic. And I never thought I'd be doing that, but here I am.
Okay. This is tomorrow night, Tuesday at 5 p.m., correct?
Mm-hmm.
At 360 here in the KTOO building. It's going to be televised and live streamed. So you can watch that at 360north.org. I'm looking over at Amanda, making sure I'm getting everything right. Amanda, is this free to the public? And do you encourage public participation?
This is free to the public, and I definitely encourage people to attend, no matter what age you are. Like, my daughter is 11, and she loves coming to this, and then she goes home and wants to recite poetry, and she can't wait till she's in high school, because this program is only offered to high school students at this time, and, you know, it's just something that's really fun. And when you go and watch students perform, like, this is my third year being the coordinator, and sometimes I'm brought to tears, sometimes I'm laughing, like, just straight up out loud. But the growth and learning how to communicate in front of people is huge. And for people to come and support Alyssa, for example, like, she's in Juneau, she's representing the whole entire high school here. And, you know, for your friends and family to come out and see you, for all the people that are here that are not from Juneau, they can go online and watch. But definitely, if you have time, you know, tomorrow night, it's only a couple hours. These kids are amazing. They will move you. It's amazing. And whoever wins is going to go on to the Nationals in D.C. And Alaska has won. I think it was 3 years ago. Mava, a girl from Anchorage, won. And Shannon Croft last year got to go. And I bet you it's going to be one of you guys here. Who knows? So we'll see. I definitely encourage everybody to come.
Okay, again, that's tomorrow night. Closing thoughts, everyone. I'll leave it up to you. Issa, what are you thinking about as you go into tomorrow?
Well, I think that I'm just going to keep the mindset that I'm just going out there to share my poems, because I've kind of internalized them and brought my own emotions to them, and I'm really excited to be able to share that and just to go out and perform.
How about you, Juan?
I mean, I guess I should say thank you. Thank you for giving us the 360 North facility and the stage and the resources and the mics and everything that we need to do something kind of alternative. So I'm really grateful for that we get those chances.
Alyssa?
I'm really excited for this opportunity personally, and whether or not I win, I'm just going to go out there and do my best, and that's all I can do, and I'm going to have fun.
All right, Janya?
Yeah, I'm really excited to see everybody go out there and throw down, I guess. And I hope to see a crowd there because, you know, a crowd gives you energy when you're out there performing. So, yeah.
All right, thanks again. This is tomorrow night, 5 p.m. at 360. Admission is free. Support these young poets and performers. I happen to have a recording from last year's Poetry Out Loud from Juno's Brianna Letter, and she recited as one of her two poems, Broken Promises, by David Kirby.
I have met them in dark alleys, limping and one-armed. I have seen them in the foyers of theaters, coming back late from the interval, long after the others have taken their seats, and in deserted shopping malls late at night, peering at things they can never buy. And I have found them wandering in a wood where I too have wandered. This morning, I caught one, small and stupid, too slow to get away. It was only a promise I had made to myself once, and then forgot. But it screamed and kicked at me and ran to join the others, who looked at me with reproach. In their long, sad faces, when I drew near them, they scurried away, even though they will sleep in my yard tonight. I hate them for their ingratitude. I, who have kept countless promises, as dead now as Shakespeare's children. You bastards! I scream. You have to love me. I gave you life.
This broadcast is sponsored in part by Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall. Serving Juneau since 1978, Ron's Apothecary is providing medication information, nutritional supplements, and homeopathic remedies. More information at ronsapothecary.com.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon on Monday, March 6th. It is right at the bottom of the hour, and I have Katrina Wolford on the show now. And we're going to be talking about Northwoods Writer Symposium. Katrina, you wear a lot of hats in the community. Which are the best to describe right now?
I do. Thanks for having me on, Scott.
Anytime.
In regards to Northwoods, I am an organizing faculty member. And then in the Juneau community, I own Taku Graphics and a publishing company called Shorefast Editions.
Okay. Northwoods Writer Symposium, how many years has it been going on?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me that. I knew it, and I'm not prepared for that question.
This will be a bunch.
No, this will be my fourth year as a volunteer, and I think it was 2 to 3 years prior that it started.
And does it always happen in Skagway?
It does. The idea for Northwoods came from a walk across America that Buckwheat Donahue did, and then Dan Henry is one of our other faculty member founders, and they came up with this idea that it is such a great location, such a wonderful venue to inspire creativity, that it's a perfect fit for Skagway.
Okay, and what happens at this symposium? In fact, when is it, and how long, and give us all the details.
Okay, so it's May 31st through June 4th this year, and we always have a keynote speaker and then an Alaskan faculty. So this year our keynote is Paul Thoreau, which is very exciting to us. And then it's a big deal. And then we have Alaskan faculty. And this year for Alaska faculty, we have Deb Fanas, John Straley, Sherry Simpson, Tom Kazaya, Andy Hall, and Lenora Bell.
Wow, those are some great writers.
Yeah, we're really excited. So I had a meeting up in Skagway last week, and we finalized the schedule and the panel list and everything. It's going to be really wonderful this year.
Among our listeners, who might benefit from attending?
I think everyone could benefit. I'm not a writer, but I work with a lot of creative people, so I always get something out of this conference. And the panels this year will run from, you know, writing technique to publication to workshops on how to write poetry. So I think even published writers would certainly get a great deal out of this symposium. And I think one of the things that sets this symposium apart is there's a real sense of camaraderie between faculty and participants. And sometimes in situations like this, there's kind of a real distinct break, kind of almost a, I don't want to say hierarchy, but between faculty and student, and that doesn't really exist here. So, you know, you might be learning all day from Paul Thoreau and John Straley, and then you might have lunch together, and then you might have a consulting together, and then maybe you're all having a beer that night. And so it's this continual sort of give and take of ideas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you sort of briefly sketch what a day looks like there? You started a little bit. Do you all stay on the campus, or do you go out into Skagway? What's it look like?
The campus of Skagway, yeah. we all stay downtown, you know, participants. And we have, on the website, there's information about housing and pricing and everything, and I'll tell you about that. But a typical day starts, we offer some kind of early bird writing workshops around 7 a.m., so that can be the start of the day. We have announcements about 8:30, and then panels. I'm just looking at the schedule now for the first day. Our first panel starts at 9, and so we have panels at 9, 10, and 11, 30, and then we break with a book signing. And then we have workshops and then more panels in the afternoon. And, excuse me, we also have faculty readings one night, and we have one slot for participant readings. And then the other evening events include kind of a gathering with music, barbecue out at Alderworks Artists and Writers Retreat out in Dyea. We also have a banquet at the end where Paul Thoreau will give the keynote. And then we also have a train ride and a trail ride one afternoon. So we always have these little things to do, but there's also built-in free time so people can enjoy Skagway.
This sounds like a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun.
Where do people get more information?
Our website is, I'm going to spell it for you because it's a little bit odd. It's NW, nwwriters.com.
And I bet if somebody Googles North Words Writers Symposium, they can find that.
They'll get all the information. And then our social media, we're also on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And so you can contact us through any of those streams as well.
What's the highlight? You've sort of shared a little bit, but what's the highlight of this symposium for you?
For me personally?
Yeah.
You know, all of it. This is sort of my annual, like, I'm always sort of working, but this is also, the whole thing is just, it's, I always come away with so much. With new friends, you know, learning about new writers, reading new work. So I think it comes from the connections that are made there. Yeah. So, yeah, the whole symposium is a highlight for me.
All right. This is Katrina Wolford. We're talking about North Words Writer Symposium, May 31st through June 4th. With Paul Thoreau, did you say John Straley?
I did.
Deb Vaness,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of other great names. Check it out online. Thank you for coming on the show, Katrina. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, that's good. Thank you, Scott.
Anytime.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 6th of March, 2017. It was on this date in 1899, the German pharmaceutical company Friedrich Bayer got a patent for aspirin. It was a synthetic version of a drug that had been used by the Sumerians and the Egyptians as early as 3000 BC. The Greek physician Hippocrates reported giving willow leaf tea to women in the throes of childbirth to help ease their labor pains. It was on this date in 1967 President Lyndon B. Johnson announced a draft lottery for military service. It's the birthday of the Colombian writer Gabriel Garcia Marquez, born in Aracataca, Colombia in 1927, author of 100 Years of Solitude and Love in the Time of Cholera, among other books. He did not allow his book 100 Years of Solitude to be sold to movie makers, though he did offer one producer the chance to make it on the condition that they film the entire book but only release one chapter about 2 minutes long each year for 100 years. Marquez didn't trust Hollywood. He said they would cast someone like Robert Redford, and most of us do not have relatives who look like Robert Redford. It's the birthday of the satirist Ring Lardner, born in Niles, Michigan, 1885. Started out as a sports writer, went on to be admired by such writers as Ernest Hemingway and Virginia Woolf, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and J.D. Salinger, who in The Catcher in the Rye has Holden Caulfield saying, "My favorite author is my brother D.B., and my next favorite is Ring Lardner." Was Ring Lardner who once said, "A good many young writers make the mistake of enclosing a stamped, self-addressed envelope big enough for the manuscript to come back in. This is too much of a temptation to the editor." It's the birthday of Michelangelo Buonarroti, born in Tuscany, Italy, 1475, who painted the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. Also a sculptor and architect who, by the end of his life, had been commissioned by 9 consecutive popes. And it's the birthday of the poet Elizabeth Barrett Browning, born in Durham, England, 1806, author of her collection of poems, Sonnets from the Portuguese, including the famous line, "How do I love thee? Let me count the ways." Here's a poem for today by Jim Harrison, Winter Spring. Winter is black and beige down here from drought. Suddenly, in March, there's a good rain, and in a couple of weeks, we're enveloped in green, green everywhere in the mesquites, oaks, cottonwoods, the bowers of thick willow bushes, the warblers, love for reasons of food, or the branches, the tiny aphids they eat with relish.
Each year, it is a surprise that the world can turn green again. It is the grandest surprise in life. The birds coming back from the south to my open arms, which they fly past, aiming at the feeders. A poem of Jim Harrison, Winter Spring, from his collection Dead Man's Float, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity, brain training developed by scientists and game designers who turn cognitive research tasks into challenging games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, March 6th, about 20 minutes till the top of the hour. And in the studio now is Police Chief Bryce Johnson. Welcome to the show, Chief Johnson.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
It is nice to have you. Our monthly check-in with the police department. What's going on?
Well, we are very, very proud of one of our own, Lieutenant Chris Sell. There was the AWARE Women of Distinction, which is an event that happens every year. And Lieutenant Sell was selected out of a very great group of women to be a woman of distinction. So they had their event Saturday night, and they honored Lieutenant Sell for a lot of things that she's done. A great member of our community, a great part of our police department. We're very proud of her and her accomplishments there. So we wanted to recognize her and what she's done.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will probably recognize her and her name from all that she does here in the community.
Yeah, and some people don't know that she was the first female SWAT officer in Juneau, I believe, which is a big deal, you know. That's a big accomplishment for anyone, and she so she's multi-talented and does a great job. We're very proud of her, and it was nice to see the community recognize her for all the great things she does.
Congratulations. That's great. What else is going on?
So I wanted to talk also, there was a burglary that happened. Well, there's been a lot of burglaries that have happened, right? But there was one that happened about a week ago on the last day of February. And I wanted to talk about this one because I thought it was a great example of how the community and the police department can work together. Because the police department can't be everywhere all the time. We're not going to catch these people without the help of the community. So in this one, the person tried to break into a house, and the homeowner had made it a little bit harder to break into their house. They put an alarm system on it. So when they tried to break in, the alarm system notified, and it deterred the burglar. And we responded out, and it happened to be a snowy day. And snow is a great thing in law enforcement because it leaves these beautiful little footprints in the snow. And so we were able to track this person to another house that he'd broken into. And then we got a call from another citizen about a suspicious person that was in the area. I'm not sure this other citizen knew about all the burglaries that we had going on right at the time, but they saw something suspicious. They called us and reported it. Sure enough, it was the person that we had been tracking in the snow and broken into the house. And so that was a great arrest. It was a great job of the police officers, but it wouldn't have been possible without the great help from the community about people paying attention to what's going on in their neighborhoods. And when they see something that's suspicious, calling us and letting us know. So I wanted to pass on a good job to good old Juno for doing a great service there, and kind of encourage folks. That's what we're talking about. Make your home a little bit harder to get into. And if you see something that doesn't look right, it probably isn't right. So call us up and let us know about it, because that's how we're solving crimes.
Was that alarm, was that one that sort of alerted physically with a bell or something at that house, or just alerted like the security company? Do you happen to know?
It was enough to the burglar decided to go somewhere else. So I don't know if it was an audible alarm. I don't know that much about it. I know there was an alarm that went off, and he left, and so that's how we got there. And between the alarm and folks paying attention to what was going on in their neighborhood, we were able to catch someone that was doing a lot of burglaries.
Okay. Unfortunately, I was sorry to hear that a body was found in the ocean recently.
Yeah, so that was over this weekend. And so what we're asking is we have a press release out on our Facebook page. If you want to go to our Facebook page and read the details about it, We don't see anything suspicious right now, but if you saw anything downtown on March 3rd, if you have anything that you'd like to share with us, we'd encourage you to call the police department, and we're still investigating that case.
Okay. And deploying officers downtown, there's been some new stuff going on with the assembly. What's that mean for y'all?
So, you know, what we have to be careful of is we're not a single-issue city. We have lots of things going on. We just talked about burglaries that are taking place all over the place. We have lots of things we have to do. And one of those things we have to do is take care of downtown, which is an important part of the city. And so what we've done is I've talked in the past about geographic policing. It's kind of tying officers to specific areas of town. We've kind of jumped into both feet now with geographic policing downtown. We've always had the two downtown walking beat officers. Those are the ones that people are probably familiar with, Officer Ken Colon and Alex Smith, that are always down there. We've added a couple of patrol officers to the downtown area, and that will be their beat. That will be their area. So Sergeant Craig Campbell and his team are going to have downtown, and they'll still be patrol officers who respond to calls. They'll take people to jail. They'll do everything an officer does, but they're going to have that downtown area, and that's going to be their beat. And then we did have a little bit of overtime available, which we'll be deploying some more officers in the downtown area on some extra shifts to try to cover some of the hours that can be a little problematic early in the morning as people are just getting to work before some of the downtown officers respond and go on duty. So we're trying to increase our footprint downtown, increase the coverage downtown without pulling services away from the rest of the city, which are also very, very important.
Okay. A good way to keep up with you all is on Facebook, I know.
That's a great way. We put a lot of information out there, regular updates about the Year of Kindness. Things are happening there. Our press releases all go on there. There's some information on geographic policing there. Yes, that's a great way to keep up with what's going on.
And you were telling me, look out, tomorrow you're going to be giving a press release on immigration, on our city's stance on immigration?
Yeah, the city will be putting out an information release on immigration enforcement, how we handle that, what occurs here in June, and how we handle that issue.
Chief Johnson, thank you for coming on the show. I'll look forward to speaking with you in a month.
Thank you very much. I'll see you then.
Listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 6th, about 10 minutes until the top of the hour. And in the studio now is poet Julie LeMay and poet Jeremy Pataki. Welcome to the show, you two.
Hello.
Thank you.
Jeremy's taking lots of pictures. Photographer, I should add photographer and poet. Nice to have you both on the show. So let's see. You're both, Barbie, part of 49 Writers, right?
I'm a member and Jeremy's the director.
And you're both also in town to help judge Poetry Out Loud tomorrow.
That's correct.
And you're giving a reading and book signing tonight, Julie, across the street at the Jack Gallery. Lots of fun stuff going on.
Yeah, great, great couple days here in Juneau.
Well, it's great to have you. You're from Palmer.
I am. My first time to Juneau, 40 years of living in Alaska. My first time here. It's a beautiful day today, too.
It's great to have you. Julie, if you had to describe your style of poetry to our listeners, how would you do that?
I would say eclectic. There's some nature poetry. There's some very personal poetry. And stylistically, there's a lot of variation. Some are narrative, some are lyric, just a kind of a variety of subject matter and style as well.
Okay. Do you have a piece that you could share with us?
Yes. I'm going to read a piece called Reincarnate. Reincarnate. Katya moves her cool white hands, trailing winter sunlight from pale fingertips. Wrists and palms mimic her never-known great-grandmother, Mabel. Mabel as she dried her hands at her kitchen sink. Blood tells its secret path, and the body holds what it never held. Selden tells me, we believe, clear light passes from one generation to the next. I don't know if she means we teach our children or if this occurs on a molecular level, some corpuscular theory of DNA. I lean in closer, but she has nothing more to say. We sip our tea while snow shimmers across the rough bones of the mountains.
Thank you for sharing. Jeremy, as a fellow poet, what do you admire about Julie's work?
I admire Julie's poetic honesty and rigor. She's sharp on a poetics level and also fills her work with a great deal of soul and feeling.
Okay. You're also going to be contributing to tonight's signing and reading. What are you going to do?
A little bit, yeah. I think my main function is introducing Julie and helping everybody welcome her down to Juneau for the first time. I'll read a few new poems. I was in Juneau a couple of years ago reading from my first book, also from University of Alaska Press, like Julie's. And so I think tonight I may read a poem, maybe two from that book, but I thought I might take this chance to test drive some unpublished poems.
Okay. What a great week in Juneau for poets and poetry. Lots of stuff going on. That's tonight at the Jack Gallery at 6:30. Julie, thinking about poetry, what does it do for you as a person, as an artist? Can you imagine your life without it?
I can't. I've been writing poetry since I was 7 or 8 years old. It's my way of figuring out my way in the world. It's making sense of the world and everything that happens, and it gives meaning and understanding. And I can't imagine without writing, not being able to write or read poetry. I love to do both, so it's a very meaningful part of my life.
All right. We'll meet Julie in person. Maybe grab a book, The Echo of Ice Letting Go.
Yes.
Tonight, 6:30 at the Jack, not to be missed. Thank you both for coming on the show. I wish we had more time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you tonight. Thank you. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 6th. We got about 5 minutes till the top of the hour. In the studio now is Buck Willoughby, and he is a friend of the Juno Co-op Preschool, and he's here to tell us about the Spring Fling Dance. Welcome to the show, Buck.
Hey, thanks, Scott.
All right. So remind us where the Co-op Preschool is.
So the Co-op Preschool is in the basement of the Northern Lights Church right here in the flats. And it's been there for quite a while.
About how many students and what ages does it serve?
There are about 20 students as a full class, and it serves the preschool age, 3 to 5. And it's an early childhood education that's based around play.
Okay. And your son, Paxton, is an alumni now?
He is now. It's amazing. He's moved on to Harborview and making a great transition into there. But for 2 years, we were members of the preschool, and has a special place in the heart for us.
Okay. And it is a nonprofit, like many other organizations in town, right?
It is a nonprofit cooperative, so parents are involved in the fundraising efforts and also involved in participating in work days. So there'll be about maybe 1 to 2 days a month where they'll come in and they'll stay for the whole class and help the two paid teachers just transition through the day and help the kids learn how to communicate and express their feelings and emotions.
Okay, and to help support that is a fundraiser this Saturday at the Hangar Ballroom. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so it is several years now we've been doing this Spring Fling, which is, it's not really, doesn't look like spring out there, feel like it, but it is our annual dance, and this year we have the North Country Cajun Club is going to be playing some live music, and it's $20 per person or $30 for two people. There's a no-host bar, a silent auction, and we'll be having the drawing for our raffle.
Okay. Going back to something you said earlier about play, tell us again sort of the philosophy behind the teaching method there.
Yeah, well, it's really based on free play. It's a very loose curriculum where, you know, the children are just learning to be around each other, and it values play as the child's natural way of learning through conflict resolution and being able to talk through things and it's really play-based, and they can role-play, and it's driven by them. You know, there's a routine that we do in the school, but there's a lot of free choice on what the kids want to play with per day, and the teachers kind of just follow them and, see where they can help and let them figure things out on their own also.
All right, and to support this, the Co-op Preschool, it's this Saturday, March 11th, 8 to 11, at the Hangar Ballroom with music by the North Country Cajun Club. That's great.
Yeah, we're excited. We really appreciate them helping us out, and we know they're going to do a great job. And there's going to be a lot of fun dancing, and it's going to be a great atmosphere.
All right, Buck, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Scott. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.